started. My name is Susie, and this is my husband Craig Spencer, and we have been the ones that have had the week-long series. He started off with evolution and the conflict with religion, or not conflict, depending on the model. And we moved into Darwin and ecology, and kind of linked up on Wednesday on how alpine wildflowers show a kind of cooperation in their evolution. And then yesterday we went on a hike. We started out, I think, with probably 20 of us all together. And some made it to the top, and some made it partway up, and saw lots of good things, and had a wonderful hike and return. And so it was a great day. We're going to go through some flowers and also talk about some ecology of the valley and up in the mountains, and Craig will add some insight. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through some flowers and just review them, try to maybe remember them, because we might have a little fun quiz at the end. So, and then when we're done, we updated the list a little bit, and you can have another one of these if you'd like it for next year. Always remember, though, the flowers come earlier or later depending on the weather, so you might not always see the same thing on this week in July. So here, we're going to start the hike up along the flat area and move in. So we're going to start in the woodlands. Now, this isn't really a woodlands. We see it as you go up a little bit further, but everybody, most people know or are familiar with the Indian paintbrush. We saw orange, we also saw some red and a few pink ones, but there are many different subspecies and species of Indian paintbrush, and they come in lots of colors. Here's a more red one. And this was a common one we saw below. Anyone from the class or anyone else remember what this is?
Yarrow.
Very good. It's a common one that you'll see many places. This one is a beautiful one along the woodlands. If you hike towards 10 Mile Creek Falls and onto Monkey Bear Falls, you will see this one along with two other wintergreens. They're all three are along there. Actually, and plus Pipsissewa. So it's a nice hike for you to see these wintergreens. Does anyone remember what this one is?
Pink
wintergreen. Very good. And just a warning, depending on what part of the country you're in, or common names change. So if you're ever in question, and then you got to get out the books and you got to actually look at the scientific name to see if you're talking about the same flower. That's the problem with common names. But pink wintergreen, and I just think this is. And here's just many of them on the right there of the path.
So this is probably, 15-minute hike from here?
Yep.
To get to this woodland part of the Holden Lake Trail, if you haven't been there.
But if you want a shorter, easier, if you go to 10 Mile Falls, 10 Mile Creek Falls, you will see lots of the wintergreens. And there's another one that has a leaf with white on it. It's the white-leafed wintergreen. And then there's another one that's just all on one side of the stalk. And it's just white. And they're beautiful. We saw this one. Does anyone remember what this is? It's in the pyrola group of flowers like the wintergreens. This is Pipsissewa. These are before they've opened up and facing down, but the leaves, these are shorter, they're closer to the ground, and those leaves, you'll see those leaves and you'll know that's a Pipsissewa. Someone else, it's another name for it is Prince's something. But I like Pipsissewa. How about this one? You see, a lot of it down low is already dried or is starting to form berries. Western Solomon seal. Some people call it false Solomon seal. Beautiful, and then it makes berries.
What color are the berries?
I believe they're white. Red? Red. We're going to see something else that has white. One of my favorite little flowers along the creeks on that, creek's edge. Who remembers what this one is? Susan, you know this.
Do I know that?
It's on the tip of your
queen's cup.
Nope. Foam flower. Looks like lots of little, they're very, very delicate.
Very bigger.
Yeah, very, very delicate.
Picture's a little messy.
Yeah, but look at the beautiful leaf, and that's another thing to know. You know, you want to look at the, some of these really characteristic leaves help you remember what it is. So foam flower.
Foam?
Foam. Okay, this is another one now that is in the lily family because it has multiples of threes, petals and sepals, and kind of long leaves. So this is, Susan,
Queen's cup.
Queen's cup. And it is just the most brilliant, just pure white.
Yeah.
A lot of the other ones kind of have yellowish, but it is just a brilliant white. They're beautiful.
How far across?
Pardon?
How big?
Why? Oh, the flower's about this big,
oh,
and they're
so
down low. Down low.
So quite small.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're very bright. These were some of them are this high, kind of in the they're on the edge, they're kind of like a, almost like a bush.
Dimbleberries.
So it will go on to make a kind of a dome-shaped pale red berry that's very dry to eat, but you can't eat it. Not particularly tasty. Okay, now this plant, it has these kind of not very beautiful flowers. You know, they're slightly white, but look at this leaf, this arrow-shaped leaf. And there's these just, when you walk to the falls, they are just, it's like a carpet of this plant. But we saw this plant, and then you turn over the leaf. Pathfinder or trail plant. So kind of think of it, you know, as that arrow showing your way. But one thing I read was when people walk by these plants and maybe they'll turn one of these leaves and someone following will know which direction they're going because they'll see which way the leaves are turned. So pathfinder or trail plant.
We're not encouraging that here.
we tried not to lose anyone yesterday. That was, we didn't. Everyone was successful in getting back. This is one of the first plants we saw. You'll see it in the woods, but you'll also see it up on the mountain.
Pearly everlasting.
So this one is pretty tight. It hasn't really opened up fully.
Is there a bug on them?
And there is a little ant like over there.
Cool.
But even when it's blooming, it doesn't open up much.
No, it just kind of softens up. Yeah. Okay, this is a wild
strawberry.
And there's a really neat picture here that Craig got with the look at all those little beetles pollinating.
By the way, we were having camera troubles, so Karen, where's Karen? Took some of these photographs.
Yes,
Susan Rohde took some of these photographs, and Susie and I took a couple of them, but not very many.
But we didn't.
So
our camera went on the link, so
thank you to the other photographer that contributed.
Yeah. Okay, this one. Some people yesterday thought, oh, it's a trillium. I said, well, it doesn't have three. And trilliums come early, and they only have three petals. What is this?
Bunch berry.
Yes, it's in
not
the dog.
It's
in the dogwood family.
Pardon? Quadrillium.
No. It's in the dogwood family. We saw these.
Who speaks French?
Cinquefoil.
Yep. Now there are many cinquefoils. So this is not a specific name. You know, there's, you know, ones that are more like bushes, and there's alpine ones, and they can be confused with buttercups because buttercups and cinquefoils can look very similar. You have to get into the details to differentiate them. But it is a cinquefoil. Now I have to apologize. Yesterday I told people this was kinnikinick, and I was wrong. Because that's a very low plant, kind of a leathery leaf. The flowers are very, very similar, but this is up higher. But there's lots of this on any of the trails you go on. What is this? Does anyone know another name?
It's a woody shrubby bush.
Are those leaves opposite?
No.
Or
they're opposite.
They're opposite?
Mm-hmm. And it's going to make a real white berry.
It's snowberry.
And these will make white, and they're actually edible, I guess.
Are they really?
Yeah, but
when they're in flower or fruit?
Fruit. You can eat them, but don't. That's what I read. But there are lots of those, and I apologize because I had it down on our old list as kinnikinick, and the new list it's down as snowberry. very common. We saw these, the daisy. They're not native here. It is an invasive species.
So as far as I'm concerned,
stamp it out.
Fuck them up.
We can pull these. They're not native. They shouldn't be here.
And it is in the book.
They pulled them in the
book. Yeah. Okay, what's this?
Cow
parsnip. We saw lots of that, and when it was so thick, you could smell it. Now, only a small group got to see this one. The faster group kind of zoomed down, and maybe they did see it, but the middle group that was with me, we got to see this. What is this? Calypso orchid or fairy slipper? Okay.
And
there
was
only one on a bend in the old forest, about two bends before you got up towards the avalanche.
And this plant, the whole thing that you see there is about 4 inches tall.
Yeah, very small.
So you really, really have to look for it.
You know, or it can be hiding under, but it was exquisite. Tom, you got to see it.
And it has one leaf, only one leaf, that round leaf at the bottom.
Oh, my goodness. Calypso orchid or fairy slippers is one that I've always used. And there are other orchids around, bog orchids, and then you've got your coral roots, and spotted and striped coral roots. Those are orchids.
Okay. And this calypso orchid is only found in old growth forests, and there really isn't much of that habitat left. And so this is one of the reasons. One of many that we need to protect old growth forests, because that's the only place you'll find this exquisite orchid.
There's kind of a funny story that Craig was borrowing Susan's camera yesterday, and on the way down when he was taking a lot of pictures, we kind of stayed back and took. He somehow had clicked on the black and white. So, but it gives it kind of more of an artistic. Okay, here's another orchid. White bog orchid. And you'll see those, especially kind of where it's quite, in the ditches or damp, and you're going up towards the trailhead. And they also are quite exquisite when they first come out, and they're very white. So that's a close-up. And these are about this tall. So now we're going to move up out of the old forest, up onto the mountainside. This is actually the valley going to Heart Lake. Okay, all the class, the people that went on the class all know what at least what group of flowers this is in.
Yes. This is penstemon.
Penstemon. There are many, many, many kinds of penstemon. According to this book and the other book in the library from here, there's Cascade penstemon here and Douglas penstemon or Tall penstemon.
What one is this?
I think this is the Cascade, but it'd be interesting to actually get the scientific names and then key them out, because I'm not sure. I think that's just a local name. But penstemons are kind of interesting because they have five kind of lobes here. They have five stamens, five pistils, everything's in fives. And some of them are shrubby, some of them are really delicate, some get quite big, so there's a very variety. They can be anywhere from pink to this lavender to a dark purple to blue. Swallowtail. And he puts his proboscis, way down into the penstemon.
So where's Karen? So Karen was the photographer.
Yes.
It sat still, and I had a telephoto lens and was able to pull it in that way. Yeah. The biggest thing was that it sat still.
Yeah. I know, I was hiking, Will, sure, he also was taking pictures of the swallowtails on the penstemons. But every time he got ready, he would just kind of go to the next yeah. flower.
I had a butterfly as I was walking down the hill yesterday. I had one land on my shorts, and it sat there long enough for me to change my telephoto lens to my macro, and I got 3 shots off.
Wow. And here's just lots of the taller penstemon. Okay, here's a new flower. Think about what it is. Right, fireweed. And actually, there is a very small version. It looks in when you get to true alpine, up above tree line of an alpine fireweed. That's also quite pretty.
And it's well named after a forest fire. This is one of the first plants that comes in. It'll just be a carpet of a fireweed. And also what comes in after the forest fires are morel mushrooms.
Yeah. Oh.
So the spring after a forest fire.
Okay, this it's getting a little drier going up the switchback. Pussy toes. And you can tell these because they're white at the tip, but right around the bottom, they all have kind of this little pink in there. So that's a way to tell.
So about halfway up the trail to Holden Lake, you'll notice some dead trees and dying trees. Anybody know what these are? This is what the
okay, very good.
Why are they dying? What's happening to them?
Is it that beetle because it's so warm?
The beetle. So if you look at these trees, it looks like they have chicken pox or the measles. And they're literally just hundreds and hundreds of these. Areas where the tree has been oozing sap in holes made by the larvae of the mountain pine beetle. So the adult mountain pine beetle can fly, and it lays its eggs, and the larvae live just underneath the outer bark in what's called the cambium. That's actually the living part of the tree. That's where the xylem and phloem, remember that from your biology class, is actually right on just underneath the outer bark. And so these beetles, larvae, feed on that conductive tissue. And if they eat enough of it, it kills the tree. And so that's what's happening here. And then when the larvae are mature, they burrow out the same hole, and then they metamorphose in the adult. Fly away. So this sap actually is a defense mechanism. The trees are trying to expel these larvae. They're just cranking out a lot of this sap, and it's not a very good strategy, actually. And you can see the hole here where the insect has emerged.
So why can't the woodpecker get in there and eat it? If it's got a hole marking where it went in, why can't the woodpecker just go in and eat it?
They do. In fact, there's a specific species of woodpecker, the black-backed woodpecker. This is my first time in the Cascades. I don't know if it lives here, but it definitely lives in the northern Rockies, where Susie and I have spent a lot of time. This woodpecker only is found in areas that have burned recently. And these woodpeckers are coming in to feed on the pine beetle, because these beetles are attracted to weaken trees, and so these trees that have been killed by the fire, if it's not a really hot fire, the cambium is still nutrient rich. And Susan and I were hiking with a forester in Glacier National Park a couple of years ago. I'll never forget this. It was in an area of lodgepole pine that had burned the year before. Rick Trimbath was the forester that we were walking through, and they said, "Now just be quiet." And we could hear just this And if you looked up, you could see sawdust coming down. We could hear these pine beetles. There were so many of them, you could actually hear them munching away.
There's nothing man-made that could help?
Well, let's talk about that. It's a huge problem in the northern Rockies around Helena, Montana. The pine trees are just about all dead. Where I teach in South Dakota, I take students to the Black Hills of South Dakota, dominated by ponderosa pine, the tallest mountain in South Dakota, Harmony Peak. The last 4 years, there's just been an epidemic of the pine beetle, and the ponderosa pine are like 90% of them are dead. So a big question that we'll get to, you know, what humans might be able to do is why? Is this some natural cycle? Because the pine beetle lives in North America. It's not like the gypsy moth or some of these other non-native species that come over. So is this some natural cycle? That's a possibility. But there's some evidence that global warming might be contributing. Their habitat, typically it was more southern. And a hard winter will kill them. So they seem to be moving, they're able to survive the winter further north now than they used to. So that's one possibility. Another one, it's a little more complicated story. Give you the really quick version. The natural fire frequency I was reading for this area is about every 25 to 30 years. There would have been a forest fire. This is before human or European occupation.
Before Smokey the Bear.
Before Smokey the Bear. So these are lightning fires. And so what this did with our forests, most of these fires were not large. A lot of them would just burn the undergrowth. They didn't get up into the crown. So you'd have a small fire over here, another one over here 10 years later, another one over here. So the landscape was what we called a mosaic. You had some old growth forests, some intermediate age. You know, there wasn't a big area of uniform age lodgepole pine, for example, historically. So Smokey the Bear, fires are only you can. And this is the most successful publicity campaign, I would say, in the history of the federal government. I mean, everybody knows about Smokey the Bear and forest fires are bad. And we were incredibly successful in suppressing wildfires until 1988. What happened in 1988?
Yellowstone.
So we started getting these massive crown fires that would have been very, very unusual historically. So why were we getting so many of these big, huge crown fires?
Suppression.
Pardon?
Suppression.
Suppression, okay.
Well, the forest got so dense because it hadn't burned.
Accumulating
fuel. So all this fuel, you know, building up on the forest floor. Okay, what does that have to do with this pine beetle? So what we're seeing now is big areas of lodgepole pine, you know, huge areas. Or huge areas of ponderosa pine, all the same age. Now, lodgepole pine live about 60 to 70 years. It's a pioneer tree species, and then they die, and then the spruce and fir come in. But we've got huge areas now of lodgepole pine, and as they start getting old and sick, they're more susceptible to disease, insect infestations and so on. And so there's some evidence that fire suppression is created without this mosaic. We've got large stands of less healthy trees that are probably more vulnerable. So here it's not a big issue. I mean, it's just it's not a big ponderosa or the lodgepole pine is not that prevalent. I don't know, those of you that are more familiar with the Cascades, are there areas where there's...
There actually are areas. Chelan County and north on the east side, there's lots of areas of not only the pine beetle, but also the spruce budworm trees that are not healthy.
So as you're hiking around, if you see trees that look like they have the mumps, now you know.
Isn't there some Holden connection to the guy who drew the Smokey the Bear?
Yeah, in the picture.
His name is Rudy Wendelin, and he and his wife did come here. They were from Washington, D.C., and were part of the Community of Christ in Washington, where John and Mary Schramm were. And so they were good friends of John and Mary Schramm. And he is dead now. I'm not sure if his wife is still living.
Interesting.
I need the rule.
Tell that at the history forum at 8:30. Mm-hmm. History forum is on ecology, stories of ecology.
Okay, as we were going up a little, you know, it was dry, we saw the what?
Stone crop.
There are different kinds. I think this was the lance leaf stone crop, but there are different kinds. We'll see later another one in the family. Does anyone remember this one? You got it. Phacelia. Silverleaf Phacelia. There was a small group of us that I was able to point out the silky Phacelia, which is what very bright purple on there. We just found one coming down from the top. But I don't have a picture. Okay, this one.
Twin windflower.
Okay, we kind of carpeted the ground, lots of them. Really quite beautiful. Now, Craig and Karen saw this one and took pictures of this one. I didn't see it. It's not on the list, actually. Is anybody familiar with what it is? It's
we
quite,
hope
it's
somebody
small.
Knows, out
no,
there knows
I,
it.
It's quite, they're small. I thought I knew kind of what it was, and so I think it's in a willow herb. But they're real, they're tiny, so.
Yeah.
So Craig and Karen were really picking up on things. We saw lots of this up the whole hillsides of it.
Bluebells?
Mertens, bluebell, or tall, they call it. But Merten is the genus, and they call it Mertens, M-E-R-T-E-N. They were beautiful.
Fields,
yeah.
Yeah.
Just fields of it. And then we saw the monkey flowers amongst them. It was spectacular. Okay, what's this?
Skyrocket.
It has... I think it has more common names than any flower I've seen. Skyrocket, Scarlet Phacelia, people that live west of or east of the Rocky Mountains call it cardinal flowers, but I think since cardinals don't live out here, they don't call it that. So, but it was spectacular.
Monkey flowers.
Okay, the yellow monkey flower. One thing that's interesting about the monkey flower, there are some that are perennials, and there's also, we saw some very, very tiny ones on the stream that are actually annuals. They do it both ways.
Why are they called?
I don't know. Here's
the
pink version.
And what name for Meriwether Lewis?
Mm-hmm. So this is the Lewis monkey flower. Because Meriwether Lewis on the Lewis and Clark Trail or Venture first described this, wrote about it, drew pictures of it, sent specimens, and so they named it after him. So now we're going to switch to just a little geology.
Okay, so we'll sneak in a little geology here. So if you see a valley, this is. Looking down from the valley, we're right here, somewhere, Holden Village. So what does the shape of the valley tell us about the geologic history? What shape is it?
U or V.
Is it U or V?
U.
U. So what does that tell us about the history?
Glacial.
So this is the classic shape of a glaciated valley. So during the Pleistocene era, the Ice Age, there were five or more major glacial advances into this valley. And each time the ice came down, filled up. Who knows a little bit more about it? Like half of the valley, was it like 5,000 feet thick? I don't know. And as that ice moved down the valley, it just carved this classic U-shape. Valleys that are carved by streams, along with the V. So you gotta keep your U's and your V's straight. And then what's really interesting,
is that scree on the right?
Scree here, yeah. And these are avalanche chutes. And I'm gonna show you a picture next, taken from up on, what's the name of that ridge?
Martin's Ridge,
looking over into this valley. Okay, so this is looking from up on that ridge there, across this big U-shaped valley into that little U-shaped valley. So what carved that little U-shaped valley?
A smaller glacier.
But then it stopped halfway up the mountain.
That's because the main valley was full of ice.
So there was a huge glacier coming all the way down the valley from that direction, filling this valley. And then there was another little glacier above it, and it couldn't erode any further down because this was full of ice. So that's called a hanging valley. And a lot of times there'll be waterfalls here right at that junction.
So is that Copper Basin?
That's Copper Basin.
Can you see that from the top of the Chalet Hill?
No,
this is kind of going off trail, and I wouldn't highly recommend it. So we got lost. We had an interesting experience, but it was worthwhile. Okay. If you really want to know more about that, come talk to me afterwards.
So I heard someone.
Wild Rose.
Okay. And I don't know how many, a lot of people will collect the rose hips and make jelly out of that. Beauties. We saw lots and lots of bees as we were getting closer to the avalanche area. And,
this is one of the earliest wildflowers, soon after the snow melts.
And the key to it is that some of them will be more underlying. They seem some more pink and some more white, but they all have those stripes in them. Now this was a new flower for me. I'd never seen or heard of it. We saw it. Anyone remember? It's kind of a. It doesn't have a very striking common name. So it's Colombia. But what the picture doesn't quite catch the color, it's really salmon or peach color, which is, there aren't too many flowers. I don't know of any other flowers that are, wildflowers that are that color.
What color?
It's a peach, very light peach color.
Okay.
It's not orange, it's not pink, it's definitely kind of a salmon or peach color. And the flowers all are like little trumpets, and they all come off this head at the top, and they're coming, blooming at different times.
Okay, so what would we say about an ecology disturbance is our important factor? So fire from an ecological standpoint, positive or negative? So smaller fires from an ecological standpoint, we'd say, is healthy for the environment. This is another disturbance that you'll see hiking up the Holden Lake Trail.
Avalanches.
Are another type of disturbance. What causes avalanches?
Gravity.
So what year was this one?
2009.
Was that a big snow year?
Well, doesn't it have to do with the rate at which the snow falls?
Mm-hmm.
And if they've had a hard freeze, so then they get ice on top of the snow and then get deep snow. Is that what does it?
Yeah, so as you're hiking around, look up on especially the steep hillsides, you'll see some areas of darker green, and then lighter green areas are often avalanche chutes. Now, I have a question for you guys that know more about this area than me. Okay, at the top where the snow is, that's an avalanche chute. Yeah. This is looking down from about switchback number 15. and Holden Village is right here, so the woodland part of the trail goes up here. And so about a mile up that way, then you start switchbacking up. And this is looking down. And so my question is, obviously we've got intact forest here, older forest. This is younger forest. Is this from an avalanche or a fire? I don't know. Any of you know? I'm guessing the vegetation here in general is, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 years old.
So it also looks deciduous instead of forest.
Well, there's a line of aspen right along here.
Right. It's not fire. There's never been a fire there. That was always like that. 45 years ago, that was still all, that was a bare slope with small deciduous plants. I think it's just perennial avalanche.
Okay,
my
so
guess,
this is a huge
it hasn't changed in 45
years. Yeah. Huge avalanche that occurred, I don't know, 50 years ago maybe.
There's also along the trail of Heart Lake, there's old beaver ponds too,
right? Mm-hmm.
That have influenced the development along the creek there. Mm-hmm.
So when you get up, going up the whole lake trail, there's this fairly fresh avalanche, but already coming in on the sides of it. This is fantastic biodiversity of plants that you don't find in old growth forests. So again, this mosaic. We need some old growth, we need some intermediate age forests, some younger ones. So these disturbances actually are important. So we have more of these.
Yeah. And right before that one avalanche, there just was lots of diversity in flowers. And it was where I hoped we could get everyone to, and we didn't quite make it, but there was this beautiful Columbine. Now this is my favorite, and then, you know, kind of you think, oh, it kind of looks like close up like Spring Beauty, but it doesn't have the same number of petals. But if you look down below and you see that nice succulent plant, what is this? Luisia, or in Montana we call them bitter roots. And the smaller version of it is the state flower in Montana. But they're beautiful, and when you, in the alpine area, there's a pygmy one that's more kind of a hot pink, and very, very small, probably smaller than your thumbnail on the flower part is.
Were those only grown in the alpine climate?
These were, the dwarf, yes,
but
alpine dwarf, but these subalpine, you know, these. Well, actually, if you go to 10 Mile Falls, and you're looking at the falls, and then it's rocky, they're just covering that area. All that and also the sulfur buckwheat are over that way towards Monkey Falls. They're spectacular, but they like it where it's rocky.
Is this among the edible buckwheat, or bitter roots, or the bitter root that was used by the Americans? You know?
I'm not sure about this particular species. The buckwheats or the bitter roots in Montana and South Dakota are very important for the Native Americans.
So I imagine it's in the same genus.
They would dig the roots.
Yeah.
We don't have this particular species in Montana or South Dakota. So this was the first time we've seen this.
Is there moisture in those leaves, the green part?
They seem. They're quite thick.
Yeah. Was it used as a medicine?
I'm not really very well-versed.
Yes, the Native Americans used it for lots of things, foods, and there were also medicinal properties.
Indian paintbrush.
Well,
on the right.
Indian paintbrush, but the taller one.
Mountain
dandelion? Yeah, mountain dandelion. Very good. And then this is just the trail with some paintbrush. And it just doesn't look like it's going up as much as it did. Yeah. Those 28 switchbacks, it just doesn't give that feeling of the work that it took to go up that. How about this one? I don't think I got to point it out. I think we saw, well, you and Karen must have seen this. I mean, I saw it, but it's a golden rod about the golden rod. How about this nice yellow one? There's lots, it goes down lower, you'll see it. Lower, it didn't have the yellow flowers, and then as you got up.
It's like desert parsley.
Okay, so desert parsley. There's lots of that. Now this one, as you got up higher, so you're up at this big crossing in the Avalanche, and up is where you would see this, and you'll see this in Glacier Park and all over the Rockies. It kind of has a complicated name, but it's Sitka valerian. The flower, it's not, the focus isn't the greatest on these flowers, but there's a pink part to it, and they're white, but there's a little kind of outline in pink. How about this one? About this big. And this was at the top at Holden Lake, around the corner of where the stream was leaving. That's right. Pink mountain heather. There's also a white variety. One of Craig's artsy. And those of you, if you haven't ever been up to Holden Lake, when you look up to the snow fields up there, I mean, you can really see the glacier, you know, the bluish kind of creviced ice. It's pretty spectacular. Now, is there anyone in the room that's been up into that pass? To the right of the mountains. We were talking to some people that have done that, and I thought, boy, I bet that's a beautiful place to go. You can also put your feet in. I put my feet in, Craig actually goes in.
This is a part, though, right?
Yeah, but that's a part. Up at the top where the snow is receding, you get your buttercups coming up, and these may be glacier lilies, is what we were. But we didn't get to see any in bloom. I guess there were some in bloom some weeks ago, Jerry said. But lots of action going on at the melting edge of the snow. And what's this one? This one comes up right through the snow. Passflower, right, the passflower. The western, or the mountain passflower, or the passflower that we have in the prairies of South Dakota is a light purple and looks a little bit different. And then the neat part about these are what they do when they go to seed. And then these blow the seeds in the wind.
Dr. Seuss.
That's right.
Chocolate cheese.
And how big are those seed plants?
Seed heads?
They're about the size of a golf ball. They're quite large.
Yeah, they're quite big. And there's some domesticated pasque flower that you can grow, plant in your side. And in South Dakota, they come up right through the snow, in April. Yeah. Now this is a picture up on Martin's Ridge, and this is a stone, not the same stone crop. Jerry said that it was called, the common name is dragon blood sedum. Because
sedum.
Of this.
And then the other plant is
the Luisia.
Luisia.
Mm-hmm. This one. You can tell with the.
So this is up in what I would say is pretty close to the alpine environment, which you don't see on the Holden Lake Trail. But so typically, kind of rule of thumb: the higher you go, the smaller the plants are, and there's some obvious reasons for that. So down low, we see the, cow parsnip can be taller than me. And then that's how tall a lot of the alpine plants.
And what did you call them again? Dragon.
Jerry said that it was dragon blood.
Sedum.
Sedum.
I said we do.
But stone crop is a sedum also, so.
Okay, so we talked about disturbances, fire, avalanche. This is another disturbance. What would you say about this one?
Man-made.
So, you know where we are in this picture?
Yes.
Yeah. We're right, is that the right building?
Yep.
Yes.
So that's where we are. This is my first time here. I had no idea the extent of the mine tailings. So, most of you know this, but these are three mine shafts up where they went in. And then the mine tailings extend for another, quarter mile. And it's, how wide is that? Several hundred yards wide?
Yeah.
The mine tailings. So there's various kinds of disturbances. Can somebody just give a 30-second overview of what the plan is for this? I know, are there some of you that just have arrived? Or not? Everybody know the reclamation, what's going to be happening here? Anybody who doesn't know that?
I can give a 30-second. They're going to remove the superstructure of the mine, and they're going to do some recontouring of the tailings. I'm not sure how much. But the biggest thing they're going to do is dig a new creek bed below Narnia that will move Railroad Creek, and then the current creek bed will be a drainage ditch to catch the water that seeps through the tailings, because that's contaminated water, down into a series of collection pools below the village. And so they'll collect the water that seeps through the tailings so that by the time that water goes back into the stream, it's clean again. The contaminants have settled out of it.
And they're going to put in a wall.
Yeah.
And the wall's going to be mounted in bedrock.
Right.
So at some point, the village will be hearing pile drivers.
Yeah.
For that wall.
Like a 100-foot wall is a big
right.
wall.
Good wall.
Into the ground.
It'd be like living next to the building in
the
area.
The kind that's hard to come down with little hammers.
Yeah. It's in the ground.
And that will be the wall that separates the natural flow of the river from the
containment.
And seepage.
So there's, that's just the part of the history of where we are here. Without the mine, we probably wouldn't be here.
Right.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then the name of that basin, that hanging valley, is called
Crocker.
And apparently there are some very nice trails up into that basin, but that side of the valley is closed because of the operation. So. I've been tempted, though. The wildflowers are supposedly spectacular in Copper Basin. So. I've been good. Okay, so here's the rules. We do have prizes.
I bought a canteen.
Only one per family. You can only win once. And I'm not exactly sure how we're going to pick. Like if there's 12 of you, then no, we're going to put a picture of the flower up. And
we're going to raise your hand, and I'll just try to go with whoever goes first.
Okay, no.
And then Craig will decide what prize you get. So this is just, it's Friday, it's the end of the week. We've had a fantastic time. It's been our first time here, and we've loved it, and we'll hope that we will come back.
And then, at first at least, we've got a few kids around, so let's just give them an opportunity for the first.
Okay. Yeah, this first one. So we have some. Okay, so any kids that are here, you go for this first one. You remember what this was?
If you know it, raise your hand.
There's an Indian legend about a small boy that's painting.
Okay.
go to the next one.
Okay. Everybody ready? Okay. Okay.
Twin flower.
A little card that has Holden Village flowers on it.
Wow. Now, an artist, local artist from the bookstore. It's really quite nice. Okay, so twin flower. Okay, everybody ready? Put your hand up like that. I'll try to pick the person that goes first.
Skyrocket.
Skyrocket. Okay. Put your hand up.
Oh. Pink winter berry, I think. Or winter green.
Okay, we'll pass that down.
Well done, you.
So wintergreen, remember if you go towards 10 Mile Creek and Monkey Bear Falls, you can see four different wintergreens, and they're quite distinctive. So, and if you take this book with you that's in the bookstore, they're all on one page. And I went in the bookstore today to get one of these, and she said, boy, a lot of people bought this. I think I should write Roxanne and tell her that I'm... Raise your hand. Tom.
Pathfinder.
Okay. So you could get hot out there in the sun up in the Alpine. So this is from Bullfrog Sunblock. You don't get sunburn. And then this is a very stylish hat.
So, pathfinder or trail plant. Very distinctive leaf. That's all you need to know, because the flowers are very distinctive. Raise your hand.
Penstemon,
yes. Has five of everything in the flower. If you take off, sometimes it's okay to take just one bud off and then open it up and you can count them. Yes. All the fives. Penstemon. Raise your hand. Yes.
Lewis.
Okay. Here's the next one. You guys, everybody ready?
Colorful.
Oh, Paul.
Well, my mind is going blank.
That area across the street. I think if you wear this and these, you'll look like a mind reclamation worker, and you could go into.
Are the boots both for the same place?
Well, we know where you can find another. Name of the mountain range in Pacific Northwest and why this name? What's the name?
This is a two-parter. You gotta get both parts.
Okay.
It's
Cascades and all the waterfalls.
So look up on the hillsides. Go ahead and click the next one.
Oh, okay. So, happy hiking, and my friend that taught me a lot about flowers, she goes, well, I'm going to go flowering tomorrow. Do you want to come with me? So, it's a verb. So, enjoy it, and thank you very much for coming.